Ezra, Dave, and Drew return on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
Bottom of the hour, Saturday morning, you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. I'm your host, Drew Mundell, joined in studio by my good friend, Ezra Ginsberg. We're discussing palindromes last segment. Shout out to the guy who tweeted at us.
Shane Uzzelman.
Shane Uzzelman. Race car lion oil. That's a palindrome. Also, this is my favorite. Go hang a salami. I'm a lasagna hog. Anyways, a little food for thought, as it were, on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Let's head to the hotline.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
We're pleased to welcome to the program a good friend of ours, Gus Katsaros. He's with McKean's Hockey. He's an analyst there. He joins us to discuss fantasy hockey defensemen as we head into our fantasy hockey preview. Gus, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
Yeah, thanks very much for having me.
Our pleasure, Gus. You know, with defensemen, we're going to discuss defensemen with you. It's sort of an interesting dilemma, because with defensemen, you know, there's only a small number who are elite scorers. The guys I'm thinking about, Brent Burns, obviously, last year, you know, Erik Karlsson, they're the elite of the elite when it comes to defensemen. What strategy do you approach? If you're in a pool, if you're in a hockey pool, you know, one goal, one assist, they're each worth 1 point. If you're in a hockey pool that requires you to pick defensemen, what strategy do you take as to when you should best select those defensemen?
Well, you know, it's interesting. Up until about last year, I actually would recommend that any poolie essentially just set the market. Be the first person to draft the defenseman. You're essentially going to get the elite defenseman, as you mentioned before. And there really is just a handful of elite guys. Once you start getting past the Erik Karlssons, the Brett Burns, and the Victor Hedmans. Victor Hedman for the Norris, I'm all for that. I think that what ends up happening after that is you would end up putting poolies into a difficult position of trying to find good defensemen while trying to essentially form their entire lineup. When you set the market, you get the best of the best. You get the highest point totals out of a very a difficult position to fulfill all the way throughout your roster. Now, all of a sudden, I think that the game is changing a little bit. And aside from those really elite defensemen, I think that poolies now don't necessarily have to take the good defensemen up at the top. There's been such a compression of production to the degree that you could probably get a variety of very good defensemen a little further on in your draft. So I would not advocate actually being one to set the market anymore. I think that you can actually wait and get better value a little further down your draft.
Gus, you just mentioned Erik Karlsson of the Ottawa Senators. He's still not skating after undergoing off-season foot surgery, and it's really unknown when he's going to return to the lineup. How do you approach selecting Karlsson in hockey drafts? Do you take him at all, or do you maybe try to grab him in those later rounds?
Well, I guess it kind of depends on the type of league or the pool that you're in. I mean, if the expectation is production and you really do need the production, you have to pass over Karlsson if it's a one-year league. Obviously, if it's a keeper league or something where you know that you can transfer players season to season, Karlsson is a must-have. Even if he's on your bench producing nothing, figure out a way to reproduce that production somewhere down the line. But, I mean, even from, you know, even taking from the defensemen out of the equation here, and now you actually have to start questioning how much production of the actual Ottawa forward is going to have taking Karlsson out of the lineup. So it might actually be a two-pronged thing here. Karlsson being out is a difficult decision to make for a poolie, and also it's going to have a peripheral effect on those Ottawa Senator players that you might have valued a little higher in your draft rankings. Now you might have to drop those as well. So Erik Karlsson is a little bit of an enigma for each poolie, depending on the type of league and the rules set up in their draft.
Gus Katsaros is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. He's a hockey analyst for McKean's Hockey. We're discussing fantasy defensemen as we get you ready for your fantasy hockey draft. Gus, Brent Burns last year, you know, Norris Trophy winner, 29 goals, 76 points. Do you expect that to be sort of the new benchmark for Brent Burns, or do you expect to see a regression a little bit lower than the performance he had last season?
Well, I really can't see him performing to that. See, the thing with Brent Burns, though, is he's like the model of what a rover is going to become in the NHL. And what you'll see is defensemen that are used somewhat in between a forward unit and a traditional defensive unit. So I think that he could still produce very good, if not, I don't really like using the word elite, but essentially that's the kind of production that he's going to get. He's going to be a top five producer in the league, and he'll probably be there for, well, let's say, a couple of seasons, and then we'll see where it goes from there. But at the same time, I just can't picture him doing the type of things that he did last year and getting the fortunate bounces and playing conditions in order to produce what he produced last year. So I would expect a production slowdown this year, maybe even more so as he ages and as the Sharks tend to change their style. And there's a lot of other factors that I think can affect Brent Burns just from a team's perspective. But from his personal levels, you would expect him to drop down a little bit this year and perhaps maintain somewhere in a range just above one of the best defensemen.
Gus, you mentioned Victor Hedman earlier, and you know the Tampa Bay Lightning obviously didn't make the playoffs last year. I thought he quietly had a career-high 72-point season, and when you consider that's a 25-point increase from the previous year, is it possible that Victor Hedman can go even higher than that?
Oh, yeah. I expect Victor Hedman to, if not be, you know, now with Carlson out, I expect Victor Hedman to actually lead the NHL and the NHL defenseman in scoring. Not only that, I expect him to win the Norris Trophy. You don't need to see exactly what he did last year, very quietly, as you mentioned. And you see these undercurrents of just exactly how dominant a player he really is and how important he is to the Tampa Bay, both defensively and in creating offense, that aside from any type of health concerns, he is going to be, if not the outright winner, he'll be creating all the Norris noise, I think, throughout this entire season.
Gus Katsaros is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Gus is a hockey analyst for McKean's Hockey. Gus, last season, Roman Josi had 49 points in 72 games. The year previous, he had 61 points in 81 games. If he's healthy, do you expect to see Josi back around that 60-point mark?
Yes, I would expect him to be leading the Nashville Predators in scoring, probably amongst league leaders in scoring as well. He's so it's funny. I was mentioning how the position itself is kind of changing. So Josi is what I would call a puck rusher, and I would categorize defensemen in two categories: someone that can actually move the puck, whether that's through outlets or just skating it out, or a puck rusher that has the distinct skill of being able to skate it out and create either offensive opportunities off the rush or at least try to set up in the offensive zone. And Josi is incredible at it. And it's kind of like an embarrassment of riches for Nashville to be able to have that in P.K. Subban and Josi, and to a lesser degree, Ryan Ellis, who's a bit more of a mover. So what I would figure is Yossi's among that bubble group of elite defensemen that could probably even challenge for a scoring title under really good conditions. Nashville started really slow last year. So if they don't get that slow start this year, there's good potential that Josi and Hedman could be fighting 1-2.
Gus, John Klingberg had 58 points a couple of years ago, and then he dropped to 49 points last year. When you consider the Dallas Stars improved their goaltending situation by acquiring Ben Bishop, and then they also acquired Alex Radulov and Martin Hanzel, are you expecting John Klingberg to possibly get back into the high 50s this year?
Oh, absolutely. And if not challenged in the 60s, too, there's a distinct possibility that he's one of those guys that he'll fall off the radar a little bit just because he had a bit of a down year. But, you know, it's not just the upgrade in goaltending. I mean, the adding Radulov up front and changing the coaching philosophy to something that Ken Hitchcock should be a bigger bonus. So the coaching, I think, has a bigger impact over the crease. But I think that between the crease and the coaching impact is the addition of Alex Radulov that adds that extra dimension of scoring up front. So I think that Dallas is leaner. They're a lot more potent. And if Klingberg is able to adapt to the early coaching style changes and really hit the ground running, he could be in that flirting with that 60 points as well.
Gus Katsaros joins us here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Gus is a hockey analyst for McKean's Hockey. Gus, here in Winnipeg, Dustin Byfuglien, obviously, he's the driver of the Winnipeg Jets offense from the back end. He had 13 goals last year after averaging 19 goals per season over the previous 3 years. What do you expect to see from Byfuglien in terms of goals and points this season?
I would say somewhere around the same mark as last season. I don't think that you're going to see a big spike or any kind of regression, essentially. I would expect somewhere around the same type of production. It's funny that I was mentioning that Brent Burns is this new age rover type defenseman that that'll essentially start taking over in the NHL. And Dustin Byfuglien was actually the prototype for that. He was the guy that would take the offensive risks, you know what I mean? Be in the middle between the defensive units and as a forward, so he would kind of rove in between those, and he was that prototype. So I would expect that his game is essentially centered around that type of concept. If the coaching staff is able to embrace it and find some ways to utilize and exploit that, then he could probably do a little bit better than he scored last year. But I would expect somewhere along the same lines there.
Gus, we wanted to ask you about Zach Werenski. He was a big revelation last year for the Columbus Blue Jackets on defense, putting up 47 points. He was a Calder Trophy finalist. As far as fantasy hockey pools go, do you have any concern that there might be a sophomore slump, or are you expecting Werenski to put up similar numbers?
It's interesting. The sophomore slump is becoming one of those things where it's almost become an expectation, and there's a lot of younger, more capable players, and I'll say even defensemen in particular, that seem to be bypassing that. I'm not sure whether it's just better training or off-season regimens or whatever the case is. So for Werenski's sake, I don't think that we're going to see much of a drop in production, although I can't see him duplicating the heights that he had as a rookie. At the same time, the guy that really isn't talked about that really does help prop Werenski at 5-on-5 is Seth Jones. If you can't get Werenski, Seth Jones is the next best available option in Columbus there. The other thing is Werenski plays that top of the point so well on the power play. And if Columbus was really good on the power play in the first half of the season and they really hit the tank, they hit the skids over the second half, it kind of affected Werenski as well. So if that power play doesn't click, I can't see him duplicating the same type of totals that he had as a rookie.
Gus, Justin Schultz had a breakout year last year for the Pittsburgh Penguins. He put up 51 points. Do you expect a healthy Chris Letang to affect him much, or do you still think Justin Schultz is going to kind of still be around that 50-point mark?
It's kind of hard to think that he would actually hit that 50 points with a healthy Chris Letang. You know, he also stepped into a very good situation, and that, I think, is more so what propelled him to have better production than just the injury and absence of Chris Letang. He stepped up to the with enough roles and with enough responsibility to be relied upon by coaching staff that in Pittsburgh that he was overburdened with in Edmonton. So I don't think that he can flirt with what he was doing last year, and I think it's going to be a little bit of a combination of, you know, he's in a better situation to be able to produce, so I don't think that we're going to get back to that that scoring rate that we saw back in Edmonton. But taking the time away from the power play and some playing time with Chris Letang's assumed full health throughout the season, yeah, I can't see Schultz just repeating exactly what he did last year.
Gus Katsaros is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Gus, we'll let you go on this last question. There's probably no such thing as a sleeper anymore when it comes to hockey pools, with so much information being so readily available. But in your mind, who are a few defensemen that would be good value in the later rounds of a pool?
Well, we're going to see guys that, there's lots of guys. I actually like Jacques Demers now being in Arizona. I think it's a better situation than in Florida. He would be one to kind of target. There's also Tim Heat in San Jose, who's going to go really under the radar, but could produce in a very deep depth league. I would generally say stay away from Vancouver just because I feel that they might have a little bit of scoring trouble, but Troy Stetcher or Ben Hutton could be very good late additions. Morgan Riley in Toronto. I think that a lot of people, if they really do want to take advantage of a potential breakout, could try to look for Josh Morrissey in Winnipeg. That's potential there. Oscar Klefbom, I think, gets very undervalued. He's probably very well known, but I don't think he's valued as high as he really is. He's a very underrated defenseman, so he might be one of the guys that gets picked lower than where he is, and someone's going to get very good value out of that. And then you just go essentially to Chicago, and you can take a look at Duncan Keith. I can't remember who the other partner was, but I would think of someone like a Rock Gosling or Trevor Van Riemsdyk. Now that was moved from Chicago, he would be a decent late season addition. And then if you really, really want the best in terms of a breakout, you look at either Brett Pesce in Carolina and Jacob Slavin. Those are two names that always seem to come up when I look at good analysis. They got good numbers, and they play so well together. And Carolina is one of those teams that I think has a lot of potential up front for breakouts, which I think will affect their blue line. So Brett Pesce and Jacob Slavin are probably going to be the most undervalued drafted players in this season.
Gus Katsaros is an analyst with McKean's Hockey. Gus, always appreciate your time and your insight. Thanks for joining us to discuss fantasy hockey defensemen on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Pleasure is always mine. Thanks very much, guys.
Take care. When we come back, Ezzy and I give our thoughts on the defense still to come, forwards and goalies. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's an IC Saturday on TSN 12.
Carlson with a shot, scores! Erik Karlsson goes coast to coast and gets Ottawa to within one.
Back one, 2-on-1, right in on goal, fires, save, rebound, scores! Dustin Byfuglien!
Defenseman scoring, that's what you like to hear if you're drafting some D-men in your fantasy hockey draft. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Shortly before 11 in the morning, and this segment is brought to you by our good friends at Bell Acres Golf and Country Club, official golf course of Illegal Curve Hockey. Bell Acres offers an 18-hole championship golf course that golfers of all levels can enjoy. For more information or to book a tee time today, visit bellacres.com. Still some days left in the golf season, so we encourage you to swing the sticks at Bell Acres Golf and Country Club. Ezzy, before we get into the defenseman that you have your eye on for your draft, you've produced a helpful to-do list for people. 5 helpful tips if you're hosting a successful hockey draft. For years now, you have hosted our hockey draft, oftentimes at Bernstein's Deli, home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. So you have much experience on this topic. 5 helpful hints for hosting a successful hockey draft.
Yeah, and this is something that we first unveiled, I believe it was 4 years ago, on our fantasy preview special.
Yes.
And so this is something that I thought it would be a good time to bring it back.
Yes.
So remember, this is if you're hosting your hockey pool, these are 5 tips.
Yes.
For hosting a successful hockey draft. We're going to start off with number 5, seeding. Before your guests arrive, make sure that the seating is evenly spread out, no more than 4 people per table. If you need to bring in some folding chairs from the garage, please do so. This seems pretty obvious too, Drew, though, but the comfort of your guests is paramount.
Yes, so seating, a very important aspect. That's the tip number 5 for hosting a successful hockey draft.
And you'd be surprised.
Are these ranked in any particular order?
Not really.
Okay.
And when you talk about, you know, seating, I mean, this seems obvious again, but I've been to pools before, and all of a sudden you're crammed into someone's basement, or you're at a restaurant, and you know they kind of jam you into the corner or something.
I can't be sitting next to you because I have all my secret players, and all of a sudden you're leaning over my shoulder and you're drafting my secret players.
Yeah, so if you're doing it at your house, just make sure that it's in a living room, and maybe if you have to use another room, the dining room, or if you're doing it at a restaurant, just go a little bit early. Yeah. Make sure that there's adequate seating. Okay, let's continue here.
And if your house isn't big enough, buy a new house to accommodate your fantasy hockey pool.
Yeah, if you need to buy a new abode, you do that.
Yes, very good.
Number 4.
Yeah, please.
Time the draft picks. 60 to 90 seconds per pick would be suggested by me. Even if you're not timing the pick, because it's kind of annoying to sit there with your phone or a stopwatch and time everybody's pick.
Sure.
Even if you're not doing that, try to ensure that there is no one taking too much time with their picks.
No.
We've always all been in a hockey pool or a football pool. Obviously, we're talking about hockey pools here. But we've all been in pools where there's that one guy or those two guys that are taking 3, 4, 5 minutes per pick. So just make sure that, you know, it's about 60 to 90 seconds per pick to ensure that your draft is running smoothly. I would say ideally in a standard hockey pool where you've got, you know, 10, 12 teams, it should probably take 2 to 2.5 hours.
And if somebody takes like 2 or 3 minutes to draft a player, you can take them outside and execute them.
Well, I'm not going to suggest that.
But number three.
Number three. Wi-Fi.
Wi-Fi.
This is from Michael Remus. Make sure that wherever you are, whether it's a house, a restaurant, a business, make sure that...
A transit bus, apparently, now in Winnipeg.
They have pools on transit buses?
No, but they have Wi-Fi, apparently, on transit buses coming soon.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's nice. So you can do a pool on a bus, maybe,
Drew. That would be certainly a different topic.
In today's day and age with laptops and iPads and phones, you need to make sure that there is open Wi-Fi for all of your pool participants.
Uh-huh.
Or if it's locked, make sure you have the password.
Sure.
And also, you know, as kind of a, in addition to that, make sure that there is an adequate amount of plugs for your guests to plug in their laptops, iPads, and phones. And this might be the most important of all five tips.
That they have the Wi-Fi be available and there be enough power supply for people to handle.
Yeah, because you know there's going to be that one guy comes and his phone is at 10%.
Well, but if that guy comes with his phone at 10%, I think that's on him for not coming prepared.
Well, I'm just saying, though, if you want to be a good host, you want to make sure that you can offer that,
yes,
you know,
but
a charge up.
Don't you want the weaker? If you come, you know, weakened to the draft, shouldn't you have to, you know, bear the brunt of the responsibility for not coming fully charged to the draft?
Well, I didn't put this on there, but I would also recommend having printouts.
Printouts?
Yeah.
Like
just because
you have to provide printouts?
There could be a power outage. I mean, there was some power outages in Winnipeg yesterday with the storm.
Sure.
So you always want to have some, you know, paper copies of, you know, your top 200, top 300 rankings in case, you know, something happens.
So basically what you're saying is you need to bring a backup generator and kill at least a good forest worth of trees to be a good host.
Yep.
Okay,
number two. That's more so on the participant.
Sorry, number two.
Number two is fairly obvious, food and drinks.
Ah.
If you're having your pool at home, have an adequate amount of drinks and snacks for your guests. I would say one bag of chips per three pool participants is fine.
That's a good, so 1 to 3 is the ratio.
That would be my ratio, yeah.
Okay, yeah.
And then also have a good...
For the record, I've seen you eat 3 bags of chips yourself, so that would be, you know, flipping it on the inverse.
Also, make sure you have a good selection of beer, and, you know, some people like wine as well.
So it's not a BYOB event? The host has to provide beer for all these, you know, these hoodlums and moochers coming to your house?
Well,
isn't it bad enough these people are in your house? Now you have to get them drunk at the same time?
Drew, you know our friends. Nobody's bringing anything. So you have to supply, especially Richie, every time he's in the hockey pool, you know that he's not bringing anything.
Yeah.
Also, make sure that you have your local pizza place on speed dial.
What about Chinese? I like Chinese.
Well, if you want to do Chinese, just make sure that's ready to go, because once your pool participants are hungry, you're not going to have a lot of time to put together that order, because you have to keep the pool going. So make sure it's on speed dial. And also, if you're having your pool at a restaurant, I suggest scheduling a break in the middle of the draft to allow your pool participants to eat.
Well, what about, you know, sometimes you have to play injured or you have to play hungry. I think you should have to balance, you know, sometimes, you know, you're eating a pizza, you're eating some greasy fried chicken. I think you need to balance that out with making the proper selection. Sometimes you get a little distracted. You take some poultry instead of taking a positive Pittsburgh Penguin.
I don't know about that, but...
And the number one tip?
Number one tip for hosting a successful hockey draft: have an updated injury report printed out for your pool participants. Every year, there's that guy that has no idea who's injured, like Ryan Kessler, for example, or Erik Karlsson is out long-term. So
I believe you drafted Joffrey Lupo last year.
Right. So as a host of a pool, you should have an injury report printed out for everyone so everyone knows who is injured, so no one selects someone and then regrets it. Well, you know, I'm putting in $100 for this hockey pool, and I took two guys that are injured for the first 2 or 3 months of the season. So as the host of the pool, it's on you to have an injury report printed out.
I got to tell you, I think your ideas are terrible. You're way too benevolent as a host. I think that, you know, it's survival of the fittest. If you draft an injured player and you don't come prepared with, you know, a proper up-to-date injury list, that's on you.
I think it's up to the host to make sure that, you know, it's fair. And some people, there's always going to be that pool participant that isn't following hockey as much as someone else, right?
So
I just think it's up to the host. You know, it doesn't take that long to print a, you know, a pool injury sheet off of TSN.ca, right? So, I mean, yeah, sure, if you draft an injured player, it's on you. But I think also, you know, it's up to the host to do that.
You're way nicer than I am, I must say. But as a former first-round pick of the Maccabi Hockey League, as you know what it's all, you know what it's like to be, you know, somebody get a disappointing draft pick.
I also won my playoff pool last year, so
that's,
I think,
true.
You know, I know a little something about hosting and winning.
I think I finished third, and if I recall, you haven't paid me yet.
Yeah, well, what did you win, $25?
Yeah, but Leibel and I won $25 each, and we can roll it over to the regular season draft. How about that?
I'll buy you a pizza.
There you go. You got the number on speed dial if we learned anything from this previous segment. When we come back, Pete Jensen of NHL.com joins us to talk about fantasy hockey forwards. Hour number three of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show is up next on TSN 1290. Who's this? Rihanna? Yeah, I got that right. It's a little sad that I know that, but so be it. Hour number three of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Perhaps you have some suggestions to add to Ezzy's list of what a good host needs to do to host their hockey pool. You can tweet those at us at Illegal Curve. You can also text them to us here in studio, 1290-90. Standard messaging rates do apply. If you're just looking for some straight Winnipeg Jets news and audio, that's available on our website, illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Pleased to welcome back to the program from NHL.com, our very good friend. He's the senior fantasy editor at NHL.com. Please welcome to the program, Pete Jensen. Pete, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
Oh, yeah, thanks for having me, and look forward to the show every year. You guys do a great job, and excited to get people on the right track for their fantasy drafts.
Appreciate you saying that, Pete. We start, obviously, we're going to discuss fantasy forwards with you. We start with Connor McDavid. In your mind, is he a no-doubt surefire first overall selection? Keep in mind, we're sort of discussing your standard fantasy hockey draft where you get a point for a goal and a point for an assist. No fancy schmancy, nothing. Just, is Connor McDavid a no-doubt number one overall pick?
Yeah, the only format where I could find a real reason to draft Crosby over McDavid is if your league counts faceoffs, where that's, you know, it's a heavy workload for Crosby. But any other format, whether it's keeper, standard, points only, you have to go with the guy that's 10 years younger, the guy who proved that with any line mates on that roster over the past two seasons that he's been able to perform at the highest level, point per game or even better last season. And, I love his potential because at 20 years old, you know what he's capable of, which is the top in the league in points, 100-plus points. He's capable of that. He's shown it. Now let's see what his next gear is, because a guy that's 20 years old still has a ways to go in this league, a lot to learn in this league, and I just love the upside. I love the ceiling. I think even with Crosby, how good he is, leading the league in goals last season, in playing less than a full season, strong line mate in Gensel. I just love all the options that Edmonton has on the wing, even if they move Leon Draisaitl to center. I'm going all McDavid in pretty much every format.
Pete, you just mentioned Sidney Crosby, and he's averaged 86 points over the last 3 years. Aside from an injury, is there any reason to believe that Crosby won't be around 85 to 90 points this year?
I think he'll be in the 90s, to be honest. I love his young line mates as well. And as much as I think, I would say there's no debate to taking anybody else number two. That's I think those two are head and shoulders above the rest of the league in terms of their potential. And, of course, with Crosby's track record, he's improved his two-way game, if that was even possible, over the past couple of years. He's become the complete package. And, I just think that he's almost a lock, if he's healthy, for 70-plus games to be in the 85-90 range. And if he plays anything close to a full season, he will definitely be in the 90 range, I would say.
Pete Jensen is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Pete is the senior fantasy editor for NHL.com. Pete, Patrick Kane, he went from 106 points two seasons ago to 89 points last year. A lot of people have some questions about the Blackhawks entering this 2017-18 season. Artemi Panarin, he's now off in Columbus. How many points are you projecting for Patrick Kane this season?
I would say low 80s, which is great for fantasy owners. If you're in a points-only league, that puts him right near Nikita Kucherov. I have personally Nikita Kucherov as number three in a points-only league and Kane as number four. But, I mean, look, even if he takes a little step back again, Patrick Kane is a very safe option near the top of any fantasy league draft. I know people have been getting on me for having Austin Matthews ahead of him in a standard league. That's because of the ceiling. I mean, if you're, it really depends what kind of a fantasy owner you are. If you're someone willing to take a risk, I know that last year watching Austin Matthews, I knew that I wanted that guy on my fantasy team. I just, you know, the potential is endless. That said, Patrick Kane, guys like Patrick Kane, Brent Burns, Jamie Benn, those are the safer options, no doubt about it. So, you know, judge the risk-reward factor. I think he can make do with Nick Schmaltz and Alex DeBrincat as his line mates. Maybe not as good as Artemi Panarin. I think there is bound for a little bit of a drop-off because I do give Panarin a lot of credit for what's happened in Chicago the past few years. But still, there's a lot of moving pieces in Chicago. Pretty much their whole top six outside of Anisimov, if he plays there, Kane and Taves has been overhauled in the offseason with Hossa not playing. And you know they also lost a couple other players at key positions, Jalmerson, their backup goalie, Scott Darling. I think this team is an injury or two away from really having a tough time making the playoffs. I mean, if things go well health-wise, they should be a lock, but that's a very tough division. Everybody talks about the Metro. That Central Division has seven teams, and six of them are pretty clear playoff contenders outside of Colorado. So I'm a little worried about Chicago. I do still think, though, that Kane gets you like 80 or 82 points to be a point per game this season.
Pete, you just mentioned Austin Matthews. He obviously won the Calder Trophy last year, 40 goals, 69 points. Do you expect his point totals to change much, or do you think he's going to be around kind of the low 70s, mid-60s?
I mean, I think of him being in the mid-70s. I think he's going to take another step forward. The more I look at the Maple Leafs roster right now, I already, after last season in the postseason, thought that that team was on the rise, but the more you look at that top nine forward group and the room for improvement in Frederik Andersen having the most overtime shootout losses in the league last season, if that team gets any better, which I think is very feasible, I think Matthews is going in the mid-70s with an elite shot total, an even better power play point total, and a strong plus-minus, which would equate to top 10 or top 5 fantasy status. So I'm pretty high on Matthews. I love his supporting cast. He proved he could do it with Hyman and Connor Brown. Imagine if he plays the full season with Nylander or maybe a little bit with Marner or with Patrick Marleau, who they added, who's a top-notch goal scorer even in his veteran stage of his career. So I really like the options in Toronto. I think they have the deepest offense in the NHL this season.
Pete Jensen is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Pete is the senior fantasy editor for NHL.com. Pete, we have to ask you about a couple guys here in Winnipeg. First is Mark Scheifele, coming off a career year, 82 points last season, seventh most in the NHL. And now he sounds like he's going to play or at least line up to start the year with Patrick Laine on his left side. What do you expect out of both Scheifele and Laine this season? You can also throw a guy like Blake Wheeler into that mix as well. Perennial underrated for his performance on the ice.
I'm really excited for the Jets. I think that they have a huge room for improvement, not only in the standings, but there are very few teams out there when you look at high point totals, like in the 70s and 80s, and of course in the 60s if you count someone like Laine, but you know he didn't play a full season. But I think that having those three players, Laine, Wheeler, and Scheifele on the top line, and also having so much room for power play improvement, that's what I was getting at before. There are very few teams that you look at in those elite point ranges that had mediocre power play totals, and you can find those. That's an example. I mean, Wheeler's an exception, but Scheifele, Laine, Ehlers, a lot of room for improvement on the power play. If that unit becomes a top five unit from, I think it was 18th in the league last season, look out, because this will be the team that really defines the fantasy landscape in terms of offense. There are some other candidates, you know, like Toronto I mentioned, and Dallas is much improved, but I really think that the ceiling for the Winnipeg Jets is Scheifele in the 90-point range, competing for the scoring title with Crosby and McDavid, and then Patrick Laine competing for the goal-scoring title this season in his second season. So I'm really high on the Jets, and I'm high on their chances of improving in a key area, because you think about it, you'd rather have, like, Buffalo, for instance. Buffalo was great on the power play, number one in the league, bad at even strength. It's easier to improve on the power play than it is to improve at even strength. That's why I like the Jets' offense and their fantasy options so much more.
Pete, I wanted to ask you about Tyler Seguin. His point totals have steadily decreased over the last 3 years. It was 4 years ago that Tyler Seguin was top five in the league in scoring with 84 points. Do you think he has the ability, especially with the improvements that the Dallas Stars have made, to get back to that 80-point mark this year?
That's another team. And when I was talking about the Central Division, I mean, the Stars are going to be as motivated as anybody because they know how high of a gear that offense was clicking on two seasons ago when they led the league in goals per game and also were top five on the power play. They add Alexander Radulov to a unit that already includes Sagan, Ben, Jason Spezza, John Klingberg on the first power play unit. I mean, Tyler Seguin in fantasy, even though he's declined, is a very sure thing for 70-plus points, 200-plus shots, and 20-plus power play points. That's, you can't really say too many players around the league are a sure thing to be among the top 10 in each of those categories each year, but Tyler Seguin certainly fits the bill, and he's I've been seeing him going 15, 20 overall, sometimes even 25. Frankly, I don't understand it. He's a guy that I could move up even more. I moved Jamie Benn up to, you know, the top five overall in fantasy for standard leagues, and Tyler Seguin is going to be right there with him in Ken Hitchcock's system. He's already said he's moving him back to center. He's not going to be tinkering around with it too much with his position from center to wing. So I really like that for Sagan's fantasy value. I think he's getting you 75-plus points with some nice peripherals this season.
Pete Jensen, our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Pete is the senior fantasy editor with NHL.com. Pete, Ricard Raquel last year in Anaheim, sort of a quiet, under-the-radar 33-goal season. To start this year, Ryan Kesler is going to be out for the first 2 to 3 months. How do you think that injury will affect Raquel's fantasy value?
I think it's pretty big for his fantasy value because one of the things, he was kind of in that same range as Jake Guentzel for the Penguins. Very strong, even strength player. Raquel was top five in the NHL in even strength goals last season, but he was not a fixture on the first power play unit. Now I think he becomes that. I think he becomes their second line center for the Ducks. You know, he should have good line mates, whether it's Perry or maybe Silverberg or someone like that. But I think he has a chance to take a big step forward in terms of his assist total and his shot total this season, in addition to staying in the 30-goal range. And we saw a glimpse of that in the playoffs from Raquel. His peripherals were improving. And I think with Kesler out, as valuable as Kesler is on the defensive end and just all around for the Ducks, they might take a little step back in terms of the standings. I still expect them to be a playoff team. But Raquel, if you get him in the 70s or 80s overall in a standard league, could return some serious value as just an overall improvement in an expanded role playing on the first power play with Getzlaff, Perry, Cam Fowler, and guys like that. So, yeah, I'm big on Raquel as a, you know, a middle-round bargain, center left-wing eligible on Yahoo.
Pete, with Marcus Johansson and Justin Williams now gone from the Washington Capitals, is Andrei Burakovsky the guy that's going to pick up that offensive slack and possibly have a breakout year this year?
I'm excited for Burakovsky and also for Jacob Rana. Rana has played a couple of years in the AHL and has been knocking on the door for a while. Same to an even greater extent with Burakovsky. He was on that third line trying to crack the top six for many years, was unable to do so for long periods of time because of Johansson, a versatile player who was very good on the power play. And, of course, Ovechkin. But we saw last season when Ovechkin was banged up in the playoffs, they moved Burakovsky to the top line with Backstrom, and he had outstanding games 5 and 6 in the series against the Penguins, almost helped them come back and win that series. And I think training camp, has been kind of a retool, reset, turn to our youth mode for the Capitals, and I love those line combinations so far. It's Ovechkin with Kuznetsov and Oshie, I believe, and then Ovechkin, Kuznetsov, and Jacob Vrana, and then Oshie with Backstrom and Burakovsky. That's a serious set of two lines, and I think they could spread it out on the power play as well to even make themselves a little bit deeper on the power play. They're always a strong power play unit. But, yeah, I really like Burakovsky's chances of getting from the 40-point range to the 60-point range this season at the very least.
Pete, we'll let you go on this last question. You know, there's no such thing as real sleepers. Sleepers are always identified way in advance because everybody's doing so much research ahead of time. From your perspective, who are a few breakout forward candidates, maybe in addition to Andrei Burakovsky that you just mentioned, who are a few other breakout candidates that would provide good value in later rounds for people entering their hockey pools this year?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I think certainly, Anthony Mantha jumps out at me for the Detroit Red Wings. There's not really a lot of fantasy appeal to the Red Wings outside of Mantha and Henrik Zetterberg, who is very good despite the Red Wings' power play woes. But I do think the Red Wings, if they can get Athanasiou signed and if they could elevate Mantha, who is very good at even strength, he had 33 even strength points in only 60 games as a rookie. So get him more into the power play mix could reap big rewards for fantasy owners because he's going real late in drafts. I do like a couple other guys to make the next step in their careers. I think Ryan Strom, whether you call him a breakout or a sleeper, has a chance to hit new heights with the Edmonton Oilers. He's been with Maroon and McDavid on the top line. And then certainly Nick Schmaltz, who we mentioned earlier with Patrick Kane. He's playing center on that line right now. The second half of last season, he had a great plus-minus. He was scoring, whether he was with center, you know, playing center or on the wing with Taves or Kane. So that flexibility bodes well because the Hawks, I think, will hit some bumps in the road. And if they can switch his position around and stuff like that, I think he can make a big step in his career in his second season, sticking in the NHL and just, you know, playing in the top six from the get-go and staying there, I think could be huge for his fantasy value, also going very late in drafts.
Pete Jensen is the senior fantasy editor for NHL.com. Pete, always appreciate your time and your insight. Thanks for joining us on our fantasy hockey preview show.
Yeah, thanks for having me, and good luck in your drafts. Hit me up on Twitter with any questions. That goes for everybody.
At NHL Jensen is where you can find Pete on Twitter. Pete, thanks again. Take care. When we come back, we discuss fantasy forwards. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, Fantasy Hockey Preview Special on TSN 1290.
Luke Cheech with a strip, plays it across for McDavid, dashing in, Connor McDavid, and scores! Connor McDavid! Turns around the defense and shoots it down low, say Crosby, he scores! Sidney Crosby just floated right in there and pounced on the loose puck. Kane across the line, crisscrosses, takes the drop pass, carries it through the backhand shot, he scores! Patrick Kane is only he can do!
Kane, Crosby, McDavid, likely three of your top picks in your fantasy hockey preview, in your fantasy hockey pool, rather. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment brought to you by Keener Jerseys. Keener Jerseys is known as one of the world's best jersey customizers. If you want awesome jerseys for your rec team or have a jersey you want personalized, visit Keener Jerseys online at keenerjerseys.com. You can check out their showroom, 982 Portage Avenue. That's the corner of Portage and Sherbourne. Tell them that Illegal Curve sent you. Must be nice, Ezzy, if you're in a hockey pool and you know you find out what position, what number you're going to draft at. If you're one or two, you really don't even have a question involved. You know, one, you're probably going to take Connor McDavid. Number two, you're going to take Sidney Crosby. It's almost easy to be in those positions, especially number two. It's like the Laine Matthews debate from a couple years ago. The Leafs were, you know, weighing between Matthews and Laine, although I think most people knew they were going to take Matthews all along. And the Jets were going to be like, okay, whatever you decide not to take, we'll take that one instead. A good position to be in.
Yeah, and even though I think Sidney Crosby is still the best all-around player in the NHL, when we're talking fantasy hockey, I mean, Connor McDavid obviously had the 100-point season last year, and I think you just have to take him first overall in a standard hockey pool. And that's not to say, you know, that you couldn't make the argument for taking another player. We talked about it. Patrick Kane had 106 points a couple of years ago, but I think we'd agree that that was a career year. Not just, it was obviously a career year, but I think what we're saying is that, you know, it's going to be tough for him to duplicate that because he just, he hasn't really done that on a consistent basis. When you're talking about Connor McDavid as a 20-year-old, to score 100 points. I mean,
It wouldn't surprise you if he got more than 100 points
this
season.
That's the thing. We're talking, you know, what's the ceiling for Connor McDavid? 110? 115? I think he could probably get up to 120 or 125, right? I mean, we're talking about the best player to come around since Sidney Crosby. And when you consider, you know, that the Edmonton Oilers are only getting better here, I just think you got to take McDavid number one. And when you're talking number two or number three, I think you could make the argument Patrick Kane goes number two overall in a standard pool. I do think he could be around the mid-80s or high 80s, which is where you'd expect Crosby to be as well.
Well, you go. I mean, you look at what Crosby did last year. I mean, Crosby did it in only 75 games. So he, you know, he had, you know, 89 points in 75 games. Kane had 89 points also. He did it in 82 games.
Yep.
McDavid, he did his in 82 games as well. So if you want to look at it on a points per game played basis, you know, Crosby was just a little bit behind Connor McDavid. You wonder, you know, a full healthy season of Sidney Crosby, you know, how close can he actually get to Connor McDavid? And I think that's what elevates him ahead of a guy like Patrick Kane. I mean, the fascinating player to me, and year in and year out, he's the most fascinating. He just never plays 82 games. That's Evgeny Malkin.
Yep.
If you look at Malkin, he's actually got the third most points per game played. Last year, he had 72 points in 62 games, points per game played of 1.16 point per game played. If he ever played an 82-game season, well, he's right there. He's ahead of Patrick Kane, likely. He's right there next to Sidney Crosby. This is a guy that always gets drafted probably late first round because he just never plays an entire 82-game season. And you wonder, if he was to ever do it, what would the numbers actually bear out for Evgeny Malkin?
It's a very good point, Drew. The last 4 years, he's played 60 games, 69 games, 57 games, 62 games. He hasn't played a full season in the NHL since 2008, 2009. He hasn't played
and
more.
And how many points? Look how many points he had that year.
Yeah, he scored 100 points three times. So, I mean, if Evgeny Malkin even plays 70 games, I think you're looking at 85 or 90 points. So it's a very good point. I mean, if you're preparing for your fantasy hockey pool, and most of them are coming up in the next week to 2 weeks, the season starts on October 4th, obviously. But when you're talking about Malkin, I mean, that is the risk that you run. It's high reward, high risk, right? And you know that it's very unlikely he's going to play 82 games this year. And it, I mean, just look at the last 4 or 5 years. You go back to, you know, 2012, 2013 even, which was the lockout year. He didn't even play a full year, right? He played 31 games. So, I mean, Malkin is a tough one. If you look at his points per game, he's always going to be above 1 point per game. He's usually around 1.1 points per game, right? So, I mean, it's very attractive to take Malkin early in the pool, but I would wait and maybe take him in the third or fourth round because, you know, there's a very good chance he only plays 60 or 65 games.
Well, it definitely is, as you said, sort of the high-risk, high-reward pick right there. Focusing here, local guys, Mark Scheifele, you know, Blake Wheeler, even, you know, Patrick Laine, how would you sort of play them out? Scheifele finished seventh overall, a sort of very quiet seventh overall last year in points in the NHL. Is that the ceiling for him, or do you think he can sort of take even another step forward, especially playing with Wheeler and Laine this season?
Yeah, you know, he could definitely take a step forward, Drew, and he obviously had the big 20-point jump from the previous year to 82 points, a career year for Scheifele. But, you know, if you think, you know, he's going to be in the 90 to 95 point range, you just have to keep in mind how rare that is, right? I mean, you just don't see a lot of players in that 90 to 95 point range. Really, you know, over the past 3 or 4 years, you typically see 2, 3, 4 players above 90 points. So he could definitely get there, and especially when you're passing the puck to Patrick Laine on your line, there's a good chance that he is in the mid-80s, high-80s. I don't know necessarily that he gets to the low-90s, but Mark Scheifele is an exceptional player, so I wouldn't put it past him. But when you're talking about Blake Wheeler, I mean, Blake Wheeler's just the model of consistency. He had a bit of a down year last year, but what are we talking about, 3 or 4 points? He had a career year a couple years ago, and he still put in 74 points. You know that he's almost always going to be high 60s, low 70s, right?
Yeah.
So Patrick Laine, again, on that line, I don't know if it changes much as far as point totals go. I think Patrick Laine is still going to be around, you know, 35-plus goals. I think he can get to 45 goals this year, personally, when you consider that he missed 11 games last year, 10 games, whatever it was last year. But you know all of these guys are going to get their points, so they're going to be anywhere between 70 points and 85 points. It's tough to say exactly, right, because, you know, things can change and players go on hot streaks and all of that, but I would be shocked if Scheifele and Wheeler are under 70 points this year.
Well, and you know, when it comes to my personal draft philosophy, especially when you're talking about your first rounders, I'm looking for a minimum of a point per game average from my first rounder. Now, ideally, yep. I want that over 82 games, so you're looking at a guy who's going to be in and around the 82-point mark. But that's what I'm sort of looking for as my benchmark. That's when I know that I've had a successful first-round pick.
Yeah, you're looking at, ideally, Drew, guys in the 80 to 100-point range, right? Maybe 75 points to 100 points in the first round?
75 even, is it would be a late first-rounder.
Sure.
But I'm looking for, yeah. You know,
yeah, it depends how many teams you have in the pool,
obviously.
Too.
I'm assuming we're, you know, sort of a standard 10 or 12-team pool, because that's usually what most pools are. If you can get a guy in that first round or even late in that first round, early in the second, who are right around that, you know, 1.00 points per game played average, I think you're looking at what I would describe as a reasonable first overall selection.
Right, and what I've said over the years, because we've been doing this fantasy hockey preview show for 6 years now,
yeah,
and when you look at, you know, forwards, it's always, you know, sexy to kind of want to take the guy who's going to jump from 60 points to 80 points, but that's really tough to predict. I mean, I think we all knew that Mark Scheifele was going to have a better offensive year. I don't think anybody thought it was going to be 30 goals and 82 points for seventh most in the league, but I think the key is to always take the consistent performers, right? So you're talking about the Nicholas Backstroms. You're talking about, I would throw in, you know, Artemi Panarin as a first-round pick. I would throw in, you know, a Blake Wheeler's maybe a late first-round pick, but you're talking about guys like Tyler Seguin, Evgeny Malkin, right?
Yeah.
I would throw Austin Matthews as a first-round pick. Again, maybe a late first-round pick. He'll probably be around the 75 to 80-point range, but I think you don't necessarily want to reach too much in the first round. I think you want to do that in the later rounds, the fourth, fifth, sixth rounds. You want to take the sure bets in the first round.
I agree with you there. When we come back, we're going to be joined by Kevin Woodley to talk about fantasy hockey goaltenders. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Bottom of the hour is come and gone. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel and Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can reach us in studio via text message. Send your messages to 129090. Standard messaging rates do apply. And our website, it's got the latest Winnipeg Jets news and audio, is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Pleased to welcome back to the program Kevin Woodley. You can read Kevin's work at In Goal Magazine. He joins us to discuss fantasy hockey goaltenders. Kevin, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
Yeah, my pleasure, guys. My pleasure.
Kevin, last year, Braden Holtby, you know, most wins in the NHL, you know, alongside with Cam Talbot of the Edmonton Oilers. If you're in a pool where you have to draft goaltenders, is Braden Holtby the guy you're taking first overall among goaltenders?
Well, I think I probably should throw out the caveat that my nickname in my longest running pool is the Donator. So, while I may be able to break down goaltending, fantasy has not been my strength over the years. But hey, let's just pretend that that's all about the forwards and defensemen and. We'll pretend I know what I'm talking about.
Well, there's no time like the present to turn to change your reputation, Kevin.
There we go. I'm going to have to hit you, the rest of your guests up to help with the rest of my roster today. Listen, at the end of the day, Braden Holtby remains one of the elite goaltenders in the NHL. Yet, I don't think you can ignore, obviously in fantasy, it's wins-based. See, I don't evaluate goaltenders on wins for the most part. That would be like using goals against average. It doesn't matter. Their performance often, you know, it can, yes, it helps, obviously, but team play is such a function, and the team play in Washington is going to take a step back, whether it's in terms of the offensive support he enjoys or even defensively. I mean, I think a guy like Nate Schmidt, who, you know, I think they were counting on to kind of be a part of this team before losing him in the expansion draft. So Braden Holtby's job got tougher. I wonder if the win totals will be the same. And yet, on the flip side of it, I actually think Braden Holtby got better as a goaltender this summer. Happened to be privy to, was on the ice with him for 3 days this summer, where he was working on some new things, some different things in terms of the tracking and his biomechanics. And, you know, adjusted his stance, his skating, and his blocker save execution all for the better in those 3 days. So he would still be at or near the top of my list. I don't know if you can count on the same win totals from the Caps as a team. I think he's actually going to have a tougher year in terms of what's in front of him defensively, but he remains one of the top-tier guys. And I honestly think he could actually be better in terms of just his straight, you know, evaluating his performance, his movements, his execution this year than he was in the past, and he was already one of the best. So I guess in a long-winded way, he'd still be near the top of my list.
Kevin, Drew mentioned Cam Talbot of the Edmonton Oilers in his question. He had the most starts in the NHL last year, 73, and tied for the league lead with 42 wins. How many games do you think Cam Talbot is going to start this year?
Well, I think it would be, you know, I think all last year as those starts were piling up, I think a lot of people worried about the effect they may have, and yet it wasn't there in the playoffs. So I expect those starts to come down this season a little bit just because they have a more stable backup goaltending position. I said when they signed Jonas Gustafsson last year that that was a mistake, and it was proven out, and it took a while for them to get to the point where they had Laurent Brossoit in there and trusted him. So I do expect the starts to come down a little bit, but not drastically, because there was no ill sign of ill effects in the playoffs based on that workload, because he works so well with the goaltending coach and in concert with the head coach, Todd McClellan, to make sure they're managing his rest and managing his game in the days between starts. And thirdly, this is actually an easier year. To me, the most remarkable thing about Cam Talbot's start totals last year and his performance and the fact it didn't wane is last year, when you talk to goaltenders around the league, was the hardest schedule-wise that they can remember in a long time. There just was no downtime for practices and goalie-specific work, less than in any years anyone could remember before, obviously because of the World Cup and because of the condensed schedule. So I don't think there's anything in his game that says, oh, he's got to play less, but I think just common sense tells you their backup situation will probably allow him to rest a little more than he did last year.
Kevin Woodley is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're discussing fantasy hockey goaltenders. You can read Kevin's work at In Goal Magazine. Kevin, last season, the story of Craig Anderson was one of the great stories in and around the NHL. We know about the situation with his wife was fighting cancer, and then he goes on that lengthy playoff run with the Ottawa Senators. You know, he's clearly a linchpin for the Senators going forward in the start of this season. How do you expect the starts to break down between him and Mike Condon in Ottawa?
Well, here's the thing. Like, Craig Anderson is an elite talent, no question. He's a guy who relies on skill, on that talent quite heavily. He's not what we'd consider a technical goalie, although he has tightened up in the past year with the new goaltending coach there, Pierre Grew. At the end of the day, though, as much as last year's situation affected his start total, obviously left the team for a while. Even with everything sort of settled down, do not, as a fantasy owner, expect Craig Anderson to make any more than 50 starts. I think that's the number they'd like to keep him at. I know that's the number they'd like to keep him at. So as good as he is at his age and with the style he plays, you know, the expectation internally is that this is a guy who shouldn't, you know, unlike a Cam Talbot, shouldn't be up in those high start range. So I think you can still count on him for quality starts. I don't think any of that changes, although obviously, you know, if you're going to miss Erik Karlsson early in the season, I think that affects your team's ability to win and probably how much time you spend in your own end as well. But just don't draft him in a fantasy expecting him to be a workhorse, because I think as good as he is, they recognize that that may become diminishing returns if they overplay him. And I know the plan for sure after re-signing Condon is to have him in that 30-game range.
Kevin, last year was Jake Allen's first year as the undisputed number one goaltender for the St. Louis Blues, and I think you'd agree he did pretty well, 33 wins, a .915 save percentage. He might have kept his best for the playoffs as well. Do you think he can be even better this year?
Yeah, he's kind of one of those guys that I've got tagged for, I don't know if you can call it a breakout after all these years, because, you know, like you said, he was really good down the stretch. I think when you look at his overall numbers last year, I mean, let's not forget, this is a guy that the team actually sent home midway through the season to try and get his mind and his game straight. He was struggling so badly. When the coaching change occurred, and when they went back to a zone-based defensive scheme, that not only he could read what was happening in front of him better, but the defensemen were making the same reads, and that's what happened early in the year. Hitchcock went to a man-on-man system, and everybody struggled to adjust. And when you're a goaltender and you're trying to figure out what your defensemen are going to do, and how do you make that read when the defensemen themselves are trying to figure out what they're going to do, it just got messy. And I thought that snowball might start to roll downhill to the point where that trust couldn't be rebuilt. So I think it shows just how good a goaltender and how good mentally Allen is, that once that switch was made, once the defensive scheme change was made with the coaching change, he was excellent. And to me, even though you're going to, you know, gonna miss Bomeister early in the season, I just think, you know, in terms of a system fitting a goaltender, his strengths, they made a goaltending coach change. Obviously, a lot of attention to Brodeur down the stretch, helping him out mentally. But I think he may be even better this year with David Alexander, his longtime sort of personal off-season goalie coach, coming into St. Louis. He's just a guy that I've got tagged for a lot of success. And you know, much like we talked about systems playing, Holtby maybe taking a step back because of what happens in front of him, you know, I think you have to recognize that for Jake Allen, a large part of that was, you know, just a better system. And probably for any goaltender, Carter Hutton, his numbers were night and day before and after the coaching change as well. A lot of people missed that. But Allen's the guy, and I think he can succeed, continue where he left off last year in terms of performance in that kind of, with that framework in front of him.
Kevin Woodley of In Goal Magazine is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're discussing fantasy hockey goaltenders. Kevin, for so many years, Winnipeg, our, you know, hometown team here, has been a bit of a graveyard when it comes to goaltending. Steve Mason comes in as the quote-unquote latest savior. How do you think Steve Mason will look in terms of fantasy hockey goaltending performance? Is he a guy that you might think would be under the radar that could produce some decent numbers?
I'd be honest with you, I don't know that I'd pick Winnipeg goaltenders, and you know, we just talked about, again, not to go to systems, but I'd be honest, like, goaltending never exists in a vacuum. That's the one caveat I threw out there. It really is a function of team play. Like, yes, the goaltender plays a role, obviously a big role, but your ability to sort of trust and read cleanly what's going on in front of you plays a big, you know, a factor in that. And you know, I see the Winnipeg Jets defensively, frankly, as the Dallas Stars North, and they're a tough team to play behind. And so, no, I don't think it matters who you got in there. I'm not sure they'd be at the top of my list. I like Steve Mason as a goaltender. I think when he's, you know, so first year of a contract with a lot of security, and you know, sort of being the guy, is when he's at his best. If you look at when Philadelphia, when people show confidence in him, he tends to reward that. And so he could have a very good first year. But I still expect Connor Hellebuyck, who's continuing to make big adjustments in his game at the NHL level, which isn't an easy thing to do, I still expect him to be even better this year, expect him to take a step, and I expect him to challenge for starts. So it's kind of like, you know, I'm getting killed in my fantasy football pools right now because I got a lot of running backs who are stuck in committee, and I could see this becoming more of a committee than maybe a lot of people are looking at after the signing of Mason, much like Anderson, you know, where 50 starts would probably be, you know, sort of the upside of things. I don't see Mason as a, you know, a workhorse number one. And obviously in fantasy, that's what you want, a guy who's going to be in there on a consistent basis.
You know, Kevin, speaking of goaltending by committee, on July 1st, Anaheim brought in Ryan Miller on a two-year contract. Do you think that's going to affect John Gibson's starts and maybe affect, you know, fantasy owners' willingness to take him in high-end pools?
Well, this is the thing, eh? Like, especially in a year-long pool, I guess, you know, if you're looking at daily stuff where you've got two goaltenders, then by all means. But if you're looking year-long, I mean, Gibson would make me nervous, not only because Miller's there, but because he can't stay healthy. I think long-term, Miller's arrival could be a very good thing for John Gibson. And I don't think this was like, not a small factor in the signing of Miller was this guy knows his body, probably to a level like better than any goaltender I've talked to over the years. And he understands sort of biomechanics and how to take care of things. And there are some elements in Gibson's game, not just, you know, I'm not talking about his preparation, I'm not talking about his stretching or how he takes care of himself, but in his game, in the way he moves biomechanically, that if they don't change, neither is the injury history. Like, this isn't a fluke. You can watch it in his game. I called it last year. Honestly, if the Ducks had gone out and gotten Ryan Miller at the trade deadline, they may have been playing for a Stanley Cup. So I do see Miller as a guy capable, especially behind that system when all the defensemen are back, of posting number one numbers and maybe taking some starts away from Gibson. I still think being around Miller and exposed to that, if he's open and kind of takes all that information that's going to be available to him, could be really good for John Gibson down the stretch, but it might be a step back in terms of fantasy owners for this season.
Kevin, we'll let you go on this last question. We know last year Matt Murray and Marc-Andre Fleury were the goaltending tandem for the Stanley Cup champion Pittsburgh Penguins. Marc-Andre Fleury now in Vegas with the Golden Knights. Matt Murray, the bona fide number one. He's got a veteran backup and Antti Niemi behind him. Is Matt Murray going to sort of take that next step, not necessarily in terms of on-ice performance because he's been so great, but in terms of fantasy performance? Is he going to be a top-flight fantasy goaltender now that Marc-Andre Fleury is gone to Vegas?
Yeah, my answer would have to be yes. There's nothing in Matt Murray's game. I don't see him as being overly injury prone. You're kind of the opposite of Gibson in terms of the way he moves and the efficiency in his game. I don't see Antti Niemi, you know, as much as I think a lot of Antti Niemi's issues in Dallas were, again, related to how bad they were in front of him. Like, that was just Dallas is a freaking nightmare for goaltenders. Like, it's just that you watch those games, and even as a peer league goalie, I would expect more defensive structure in front of me. So he's better than he showed in Dallas, but I don't see him as a guy who's going to steal starts. And I don't see anything in Murray's history that suggests he's going to miss a ton of time. I mean, obviously the stuff he missed early last season was more collision-based as opposed to soft tissue. The short answer is yes. I expect him to be on a team that is, you know, also good structure-wise. Both as the way they attack goaltenders is efficient, as well as the way they defend for their own goaltender. I see Matt Murray as, you know, one of those guys who needs to be drafted, would probably be drafted high up in a pool. There's nothing but upside there.
Kevin Woodley is with In Goal Magazine. Kevin, always appreciate your time and your insights. Some great analysis of the goaltending world. Always appreciate you joining us.
Perfect. Now I just need to have you guys help me out with the rest of my pools later so I can get rid of this donator tag.
It sounds like a good quid pro quo. We appreciate it, Kevin.
Thanks, guys.
Take care. When we come back, we got one final segment on this Saturday morning. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's an IC Saturday on TSN 1290.
Steals one from Evander Kane.
Bobrovsky! Bobrovsky shuts the door. You're the number one cop on the force, Bobrovsky.
Kovalev beats Sergei. Bobrovsky!
But Bobrovsky!
Bobrovsky! Goaltenders galore, the subject matter. As we get you ready for your fantasy hockey pool, goaltenders, forwards, defensemen, all of them have been discussed on this Saturday morning on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. In case you missed any of the show, in case you want to listen back to it for some tips, insights as you approach your draft date, it's available on our website, illegalcurve.com. It's available on tsn1290.ca. You can subscribe via iTunes, subscribe via your Android device, get it sent right to your phone each and every week, no questions asked. Final segment on this Saturday morning, it's brought to you by our good friends at Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. Tonight at Rumors, his final night in town. He's a writer on Saturday Night Live. He's got a great first name. His name is Drew Michael. two shows tonight, 7:15 and 10 p.m. Tickets available, rumorscomedyclub.com. And while you're there, check out the list of great upcoming comedians. Get your tickets now before they sell out, because they always do. Rumorscomedyclub.com. Ezzy, one quick programming note before we talk about fantasy hockey goaltenders. No show next Saturday. Yom Kippur.
Yep.
Going to be co-faxing it.
Yep.
Going to be at synagogue repenting for, well, Ezzy's got more to repent for than I do, but that's okay.
I'm just worried about the fasting. I mean,
yeah,
I can get through, you know, 6 or 8 hours.
Yeah, well,
but,
you
but
sleep
once you get into,
usually,
like, 12 or 16 hours, I mean, I get really hungry. But, yeah, you know, you got to do it.
Well, for those who don't know, on Yom Kippur, you know, you fast from sundown the night before. So from sundown on Friday night all the way through sundown on Saturday night, you're not supposed to eat or drink. So it is a, it gets, you know, it gets a little bit painful there at the end of the day. As the hours seem to really drag out as you get hungrier and hungrier and thirstier and thirstier, but all in the name of repenting for our year's worth of sins.
There were a couple of years there where I was going to the Mindell family for the break fast,
yes,
meal that you have after you fasted.
Yes,
though
the family's disbanded,
hours,
so that we no longer have to invite you to that.
Well, I'm sorry, Drew, but I have to go to the Pfeffer family's break fast now.
It's your family now.
I mean, I'm contractually obligated.
Well,
here,
you know, the wedding ring on your finger does obligate you to go to that family instead of my family, but that's all right. Anyways, no show next Saturday. We're going to return on Tuesday, October 3rd. That's going to be our NHL season preview show. That's the debut of NHL This Week. Typically, NHL This Week will be on Wednesdays, but because the Jets and the Leafs are playing Wednesday night, we're going to do our NHL season preview show on Tuesday, October 3rd. Eric DeHatchick of The Athletic is going to join us. Kevin Allen of USA Today, he's also going to join us. So stay tuned. Tuesday, October 3rd, that's our NHL season preview show as we lead into the start of the season the next day, the Wednesday night, between the Leafs and the Jets on Wednesday, October 4th.
Now, Drew, I'm very pumped up for the show. The fantasy hockey preview show and the season preview show are always my favorite shows, maybe with the exception of when we do our playoff preview show.
Sure.
But this is the best time of year. You got, you know, the baseball playoffs coming up. You got NFL season in full tilt, CFL. Uh-huh. It's the best. Late September, early October is always the best. You know, I know we only have like 3 or 4 minutes here,
yeah,
but, you know, just quickly on goalies, you know, we played that audio clip, that little medley of Sergei Bobrovsky there, and we were talking to Kevin about Braden Holtby, who obviously had the most wins last year with Cam Talbot. I agree with Kevin. I think Braden Holtby's win totals are going to go down a little bit. I don't think they're going to go down drastically, but if I'm in a fantasy hockey pool and I'm taking goalies, I'm going with Bobrovsky first overall, and, you know, that seems like it's not much of a stretch because he won the Vezina Trophy, of course, this year, but I really like this Columbus Blue Jackets team, and we know that they're only getting better, right, and they've added Artemi Panarin, but when you're talking about guys like Alex Wenberg,
mm-hmm,
and Oliver Bjorkstrand, I mean, there is no shortage of offensive talent on this team. Obviously, you know, Cam Atkinson had the career year last year, and, you know, talking about defensemen, I think Seth Jones is also a guy, you know, that you should try to scoop up in your fantasy hockey pool. I think his point totals are going to go up. So for me, Bobrovsky's the best goaltender option.
Let me ask you, for your pool, which you host, we never select goalies.
We did for a while, but the problem, you know, when you're in a hockey pool with 10 teams,
yeah,
you know, once the top, you know, 2 or 3 goaltenders are gone, there's a bit of a drop-off. And usually, you know, the guys in our hockey pool, they don't like to take goalies, so that's why we've scrapped it.
I think we should bring it back. I think there's a reason to bring back goaltenders. I think it's worthwhile. I mean, you might maybe a win isn't 2 points. Maybe a win is 1 point or something. But I think you should bring goaltenders back, and just it adds another wrinkle. Maybe you think a goalie is going to have a fantastic year, like a Matt Murray, and you want to take him in the third round or the second round where you think that a forward would typically be going. I think we should bring back goaltenders.
I would have no problem with that. And, you know, I wanted to get this in really quickly here too, Drew, because we're getting, you know, the 1 minute sign from Rory here. But
yeah, producer,
you know,
Rory.
We talked about Matt Murray with Kevin Woodley last segment. And, you know, when you consider that Matt Murray already has 2 Stanley Cups and he had 32 wins last year in 49 games, I think if he plays 60 or 65 games, you're looking at 40 wins for Matt Murray. So if Sergei Bobrovsky is the number one goaltender, and maybe you've got Braden Holtby and you've got Cam Talbot up there, I think Matt Murray has to be one of the top 5 goaltenders that are selected in your pool.
That's it for this Saturday morning in the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. Big thanks to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, Keener Jerseys, and Bell Acres Golf and Country Club. Support those fine Winnipeg businesses because they support Illegal Curve Hockey. Big thank you to all of our guests on this morning's show. Jason Bell, the Winnipeg Free Press. Steve Goldstein, Florida Panthers play-by-play broadcaster. Gus Katsaros, Pete Jensen, and Kevin Woodley all joining us as part of our fantasy hockey preview show. In case you missed any of the show, it's available on IllegalCurve.com, on TSN1290.ca, or get it sent to your Apple and or Android device. Subscribe, get it sent to you each and every week. For producer Rory, doing a great job behind the board. For Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290.
As long as we set the yard, the team will be all right.